Good morning. It is 7 after 9:07, and we are brought to you by Landscaper's Corner, celebrating 10 years in business, your one-stop shop for all your landscaping needs. Landscaper's Corner, 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. Call 225-9433. Question of the day, brought to you by United Structural Systems, your foundation repair and waterproofing experts, ifixfoundations.com. Experts say the price of gas may drop to below $2 a gallon. Do you think it will? You tell us at WVLKAM.com. Tune in for the results with Cruiser and Crew between noon and 3. Yesterday, our question was, are you surprised by the recent sex scandals like Jared Fogle's arrest and the Ashley Madison leaks? 92% of you said, nope, you weren't surprised. It's a natural result of society becoming more permissive. 8% of you said, yes, you were surprised. It's just a coincidence of timing that we're hearing about several of these things at once. Ray Larson, I have a question for you about this Jared Fogle thing. It's been announced that he's going to plead guilty to, it sounds like, everything that he was charged with. Mm-hmm. Now, don't people usually plead guilty after having worked out some kind of deal with the prosecutor?
I'm guessing he already has.
You think he already has?
What do you think, fellas?
We got a room full of prosecutors. Why don't you introduce our guys?
Okay. Rob Sanders.
Hey, Rob.
Is from Covington. Has been on the show a lot.
Yep.
Chris Coron is from Bowling Green. And
Chris,
he, too, has been on the show a lot.
Good morning.
And Rick Bartley is from what we call Pikeville.
Yeah.
And he's been on the show, not as often, but he always brings a little humor.
Brings it. Yeah, good morning.
Okay.
All right, so you think Jared already worked a deal before it hit the press that he was going to plead guilty?
I suspect that he's worked an agreement. Something tells me that what Jared's going to prison for and the length of the sentence isn't going to be much of a deal. But normally nobody pleads guilty unless they've got some sort of agreement in place.
That's why I was wondering.
And it will be less than, I suppose, what the maximum could have been had he gone to trial. But given the nature of the charges that I've seen discussed in the media, I suspect Jared Fogle isn't going to be seen or heard from for several decades.
So what I read was a minimum of 5 years, but you guys think he'll get more than that?
My guess, especially with what they're talking about him traveling across state lines to engage in sexual activity with a minor, I would say at least a decade or more he's looking
really?
At.
Really? Yeah. No kidding. And his lawyer, you know, has said that he plans on seeking help in prison and turning his life around. And
yeah, there's no cure for what the disease
right.
he has.
You know, somebody sent me an email yesterday, I think it was, Ray, that said that Dr. Graniger said one time that's the one psychological disorder that you just can't cure.
No, there's, I mean,
you talk about perversion, I guess, or whatever.
Talk about anything, any other sexual preference that anybody has, whether it's a preference for women or a preference for men, or yeah, that's just what their preference is. And
yeah,
it's no more curable. I don't think it's any more curable than trying to cure somebody from being gay. I mean, we've progressed far enough in our society now that I think everybody generally accepts that someone's preference is what it is, and you're not going to change it no matter how much you dislike it. And that's pretty much the same thing when it comes to these pedophiles, is they're just turned on by children. I don't think there's a whole lot of anything you can do with it except lock them up and keep them away from kids.
We had an expert come several years ago and talk to one of our conferences, and she told us that very thing. She said, whatever your preference is sexually, if I were to treat you for a year and come back and interview you, do you think you would like just the opposite of what you like right now? And we all sat there and shook our heads, no. And she said, it's the same thing.
Really? And unless they put him in a cell by himself and keep him away from everybody else, people that are child molesters aren't very well handled in prison, I understand, even by the other inmates.
Well, they may be very well handled.
Well,
in prison,
so to speak, maybe that was the wrong choice of words. Yeah.
They're not treated well.
They're not treated well. Even the bad guys don't like child molesters, right?
Well, I'm proud of Ray that he stayed away from a footlong joke. Talking about Jared, but there have been plenty of those going around, I understand.
Yeah.
But no, generally speaking, I think they're cordoned off into their own. Unfortunately, we have enough of these pedophiles out there in the world that they have their own blocks a lot of time in the prison where we lock all the pedophiles in one spot to keep them away from the rest of the prisoners who might not look so kindly upon somebody that preys upon a child.
Do they get help, quote-unquote, psychologically speaking, while they're in prison?
Part of the, anytime you have a sex offender, they go through what's called the sex offender treatment program. It's sentencing. There's a evaluation brought before the court. I've always put it this way. I went to a conference a few years back where the preeminent expert in the world, who's a professor out of Oxford University in England, again, what we've said earlier, this is not curable. It's barely manageable in the best of circumstances with high levels of supervision. I think the treatment and the money we burn on these sex offenders, I think is to hopefully give some sort of false sense of security to people other than actually doing any good. You just can't cure that type of aversion that these offenders have.
I think the most you can do is try and train them to control their own impulses to where they know that, okay, I'm turned on by something that's illegal. If I don't want to end up back here in prison again, I need to control myself and stay the heck away from kids out there, or otherwise I'm coming back.
Could they surgically be fixed?
There's been cases where they've done chemical castration, but even then, it's such a embedded psychological issue that doesn't even work.
Really? Wow. Now, the judge will be the decider of what.
Is this a federal? It's a federal case.
It's a federal case, so there's a sentencing range. Both parties will file sentencing memos arguing why what they think the actual sentence should be, and then the judge will actually impose the sentence.
And it could be, they said, I think, a minimum of 5 years.
Five and a half, and then an aggravator could be up to over 10 years, I believe.
And I guess I was a little bit surprised, and I don't think I'm naive, but I guess I am, that there are brokers who can get you a 16-year-old girl, because that's apparently what he went through.
These days on the Internet, I think there's a broker that can get you about anything you want, no matter whether it's kids or drugs or you name it, you can get it on the Internet these days.
There's a thing called the dark net, which you can go through a system called Tor, and basically there's message boards where you can buy anything from a couple of million credit card numbers to an 8-year-old child to a missile launcher. Anything you think of, you can buy it on the dark net.
Wow, that just blows me away. Is it a possibility that Jared might be giving up these guys that worked as his broker as part of his deal?
Certainly possible. I mean, I don't know enough about the ins and outs of that case to know whether that was a possibility, whether that, in terms of whether the case is new enough, whether these guys knew Jared got busted. You know, obviously it was in the media, so they may have cut ties with him or changed all their phone numbers and email addresses and stuff like that. There are ways for people to move along where the person that's in trouble no longer has access to set up the person that they were working with. But depending on the circumstances of how and when Jared got busted, that's certainly a possibility.
An interesting and pretty unique wrinkle to this case that a lot of people might have missed. They said that this is an open plea, an open case, which tells me that they have thoroughly interviewed him, and he's pleading guilty to what he has told them about. But it's expressly open. If more victims come forward, then his deal is off, or he may get additional time. So when I heard that wrinkle there, that the case is still open, that tells me that he has given them some very complete interviews, but they don't trust him either.
Wow. If you guys have questions, we got the biggest, the brightest, the smartest, the best, and the best looking prosecutors
and Ray,
in the studio with us. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590. Email jackpatty at wvlkam.com. As I understand it, none of our people on our panel today were on the list yesterday, the Ashley Madison list, although a couple of them ended up on the Dolly Madison list, I understand. But that's good news. There's another big story.
Well, I wasn't.
You were not.
No, I just want to make sure. No.
Nor was Bill Clinton. That surprised me.
I don't believe that.
No, okay.
We had no prosecutors from Kentucky's email addresses.
Had no prosecutors. Well, that's good to know, because there were a lot of people in state government, 73
in Kentucky.
Yes.
Apparently the third most data dump, email addresses were ky.gov.
ky.gov, yeah.
Oh, my.
Another proud moment for the Commonwealth.
And the White House.
The fact that anybody would be dumb enough to use a government email address to access any websites, much less an Ashley Madison site, is just astonishing.
Well, we had the reporter that did the investigation for Channel 18 on with us yesterday, and he pointed out, and rightfully so, of course, we weren't going to give any names, naturally, but he pointed out that you got to be careful because, you know, people actually do things like that as a joke to try to get, or maybe even as a, because they're mad at somebody, to get them in trouble. So because their name turned up, it doesn't necessarily mean that they made the arrangement themselves. But I think you had to pay money.
Right. This one was unique because just having your email address on there, like you said, somebody else could have plugged your email address in. But as I understand the way this website worked, you had to pay money to talk to people.
Right.
So if an email address just showed up, then it's possible that they weren't using the site. But they also released the records of how much each email address spent on the website. So you're going to have a hard time explaining how your email address is showing up and you're making charges on a credit card.
Yeah.
Good. There's going to be a lot of guys making up a lot of stories.
And there's going to be a lot of divorce attorneys going, we're in the money.
I've actually seen that on Facebook, divorce attorneys posting a link to the article saying, just a reminder, I do divorce work.
Oh, that's funny. Let's go to the phones. Dean, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning to all of you, and thanks for having your guests there. I have a two-part question. First of all, I want to say I support law enforcement heavily and the work that all of you all do. It's you doing a good cause and a good job. But I'm beginning to grow concerned about what I see as inconsistency in the courthouse itself. And people who seemingly serve very little jail time are back out on the street. And then there is a web that you can get. It's called Mobile Patrol. You can get it on your computer or you can get it on your cell phone. And I know a specific story of someone I know personally, a 63-year-old woman who missed a court date in another county next to Lexington. And she was picked up, took back to the other county, spent about 4 days in jail. But in the same community, a drug dealer was arrested and out that afternoon. And so I'm seeing these people getting arrested for minor crimes, not being able to pay their fines, not showing up for court, and they're treated more harshly than other serious criminals. And I'm concerned that this is going to lead to problems in our judicial system. And I want to see what you think. I'm just simply a layman person. I'm starting to see this. What do we need to do to really make things fair in our court system so real criminals stay in jail, but everybody else has to pay for their crime? If they don't have the money to pay for it, it's a minor offense. Maybe they should be forced to do public service instead of leaving them in jail. So I'm just kind of confused about what's going on.
All right, Dean, that's a great question. I'm going to let you listen off the air, if you don't mind, because I have to take it. As a matter of fact, let me go ahead and take this break, and I'll let all four of you comment on that when we come back. And if you have a question for our panel of expert prosecutors, 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll-free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, email jackpatty@wvlkam.com. And we're back with our panel of experts. There's a prosecutors' conference that takes place here in town. Is that once a year or a couple times a year, right?
This is the annual prosecutors' conference.
Once a year.
That includes county attorneys from all over the state and Commonwealth attorneys and their assistants. And it's attendance at these conferences has really blown up because of what they call mandatory continuing legal education requirements. And so before, people didn't show up quite so much. Now they have to have these credits.
Chris Coron from Western Kentucky, Rob Sanders from Northern Kentucky, Rick Bartley from Eastern Kentucky with us. And a question was asked going into the break. Ray, kind of rephrase it so folks will know who just tuned in.
The frustration by the caller was that you have drug dealers that get arrested and get out very quickly, but you have somebody that fails to appear to pay a fine, goes in for 4 days. And the overriding impression I got from the caller was the real frustration at how the criminal justice system is working. And Rick Bartley raised a question with me yesterday. And Rick, why don't you tell us what that is? But get up on that mic.
Well, I think our caller has put his finger on something that I've been talking about now for several months, and that is our priorities for the judges and the court system. The number one cause of arrest in Pike County right now is failure to pay fines and failure to appear. And our jail is full of them. And so, yes, whenever a drug dealer or some pretty serious criminal gets arrested, the judges are bending over backwards to let that violent criminal out to make room for the person that hasn't paid their fine. Mm-hmm. And all you have to do is look at any of these counties that put their jail bookings online, and you'll see that's the number one cause of arrest. But Ray's word there is exactly what I think this caller is getting to, and that's frustration with our judges and frustration with our court system. When I go out and talk to people in the community, or just if I'm in a local store, the number one question I'm always asked when I go out is, Rick, can I shoot these guys that are burglarizing my house or that's burglarizing my building? I'm tired of it. I've called the police in the past. These people get arrested. I see them driving down my street. And in fact, they're right back in there again. I'm not calling the police anymore. I'm going and getting a gun.
What do you tell them?
I tell them what the law is. And the law is, if they're in your outbuilding doing a property crime, you can't shoot them. I tell them if they're in your house or about to come in your house or in your car, then the law says you have the right to use deadly force to protect yourself and your family, but not your property. And they say, well, I just don't know what I'll do if I catch them in my building again. And what that is, it's just the frustration that they see with these repeat offenders coming out over and over. And I know Ray has talked about this in the past. All we hear about emptying the jails and the prisons is these nonviolent criminals. But burglary and theft are two of the crimes that are classified as nonviolent. And I know Ray has talked about this in the past. Those victims are the victims that call me and are the most upset.
I've been victimized twice, and so I know exactly how they feel.
And so they're very frustrated to see these people walking around. And here's what I'm really worried is about to happen. It's the vigilanteism that people are going to start taking this matter into their hand because they've lost faith in our judges. They've lost faith in the system. And whenever that happens, it's like looking behind the curtain at the Wizard of Oz. If people lose faith in our justice system, we've got real problems, Jack.
This is Renee. Good morning, Renee.
Good morning. I love your show.
Thanks.
My question is, last weekend, I was at the Woodland Arts Festival walking around, and there was a gentleman who was not a policeman, not in uniform, but he was carrying a gun in a holster on his hip. Is that legal?
Absolutely.
Well, but I thought we had, like, conceal and carry. So you're saying that just anybody can just walk around with a gun?
You have to have a license to carry concealed. You don't have to have anything to carry open.
Kentucky's an open carry state.
Yeah. Yep. Wasn't doing anything wrong, Renee. All right. But if he had the gun hidden and he didn't have a concealed carry license, he could get in trouble. Sure. It's 9:30. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Somebody says, I've lost faith in the justice system. Earl, we'll get to you when we come back. We've got an update from the Information Center next. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, email jackpatty@wblkam.com. We have Ray with us, of course, as we always do. Chris Coron from Western Kentucky and Bowling Green. Rob Sanders from Northern Kentucky, Covington, and Rick Bartley from Eastern Kentucky, Pikeville. Also in the studio with us this morning. And Earl, have you lost faith in our criminal justice system?
Yes. We have a two-party, we the people and we the people who work for government. When I talk about Ray, you remember this Lexington police officer who ran over and killed a woman on Harrisburg Road, racing down the road with his double lights, the sirens on his car?
Yeah.
What did you do? You didn't charge the man with manslaughter, right?
No, what happened was is we presented the whole case to the grand jury. And, you know, when you have a chance to present all of the evidence to the grand jury, then you kind of ask them to make the decision. And we had an independent investigation done in that case by the Kentucky State Police, and they said that the young woman who unfortunately was killed, they call it a dart out, darted out in between traffic. It was not at an intersection, and the police officer ran into her and killed her. And the grand jury, after hearing all the evidence, especially the state police investigator, chose not to indict. So that's what happened.
All right. We had a caller that didn't want to go on the air, said, if someone enters your home, see, this is you guys are right. This is what people want to hear about. If someone enters your home who has a restraining order and the homeowner shoots them, is the homeowner protected?
Yes. Under Kentucky law, all you have to do is articulate, or in other words, say that you are in fear for your life. And if somebody's in your house and you're in fear for your life, you can shoot them. I mean, it gets very complicated sometimes. We'll have cases where somebody invited another person over to their house, and then they got in an argument, and then they told them to leave, and then they shot them because the person wouldn't leave. And that's a little bit not as clear cut as a burglar breaking in, but the law even protects that person. But somebody, a stranger breaking into your house, or somebody you got a restraining order against, they break into your house. Anybody that breaks into your house, you're taking your life into your own hands when you break into another person's house, because in Kentucky you're allowed to use deadly force against them.
We had one complicated one, Ray, not too long ago, in the last 2 or 3 years. Guy shot a guy through his door. Remember that one?
Right.
And what happened? I don't remember.
Because it was an interesting case, because this fella was at home, and all of a sudden he hears this loud banging on the door, and he looked through the peephole, and here's this great big white guy standing on his porch, and he went and got his gun inside.
He didn't know him, right?
No, he didn't know him. He went, and the guy reared back to kick the door in, and the guy shot his .45 through the door and hit the guy right in the chest, and he was what you call dead right there. And of course, you present that kind of a case to the grand jury.
Yeah.
And the grand jury, you know, he was entitled to do that. But I will say one thing.
Yeah.
The guy inside was a convicted felon, and so he was charged with possession of a firearm by a convicted felon.
You asked our guest this morning, which was, I think, a great idea, to share with us maybe some of the more interesting cases that they are, strangest cases they've had.
So, Rick, let's start with you.
Well, usually, as prosecutors, we like to talk about the ones that we won, but I want to tell you about one that I lost.
Okay.
And this was just a couple of months ago. We had three people in a house, and for those people that are mystery people, it's the locked door mystery. And so three people in the home, one of them dies, the 911's called at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and when the police and the coroner gets there, it's determined he's been dead probably 12 to 15 hours. His girlfriend is the woman in the house, and then the accused is the other guy. The autopsy shows evidence of trauma. You know, he's got bruising and things on his face. It also shows, though, five different drugs. The girlfriend testified, and also the accused. And the accused said the man passed out. The girlfriend come in, got in the bed with him. And then the deceased woke up, come in, caught him, and they fought, and he killed him, basically. Well, the jury found him not guilty in about 10 minutes. And they said, Rick, what kind of witnesses have you brought in here? You know, the girl, before they interviewed her, had to be taken to the hospital and have her stomach pumped because she had OD'd. And so that's my witness, you know.
Yeah.
And they just said, you've got to prove your case beyond a reasonable doubt according to these instructions. They said, we wouldn't believe anything any of those people said. And frankly, they said, we don't care if a bunch of people want to get high and party and kill each other. That's their problem. So that was my big case I lost.
That's interesting. Chris?
You know, we've talked about on the show several times different terms we've learned, and just when you think you've heard or seen everything, you have something new come up. And recently we've seen some of this called sextortion.
I had never heard that term before this morning.
I hadn't either until recently. And we had a case where you now have individuals that go on, especially social media, trolling for underage girls. They'll strike up a conversation and manipulate the child. Most of the time it's a 15, 13-year-old girl, and manipulate them into sending them a photograph of them nude. after they get one, they then basically have control of them because they'll tell them that if you don't do what I say, I'll post this naked photo out on all your Facebook or Instagram, all the pages, and all your friends will see it. We've seen nationally even some situations where people have used this type of material to extort the child. And this kind of goes back to the Jared Fogel conversation. They'll extort the child into either traveling to come see them for actual for an actual sexual assault contact, or they'll visit the child. So it's
But is that an actual charge? That's not a
Well, no, what we actually do is there's a computer enticement statute in Kentucky that we can use where even if somebody's across state lines, we can establish jurisdiction. The case I've got pending right now, the individual was actually in the United States Navy, and we've had to extradite him from out of state to face charges for doing this to this child.
All right, your turn.
Well, we just talked about one of my more interesting ones a couple weeks ago on this show where we had a transgender woman, in other words, a person with male genitalia but identified and dressed as a female, stabbed another man 70-plus times and then claimed self-defense. That was one handled by my office. It's one of the more recent ones. But to get to probably my most bizarre case, I'd have to go all the way back to when I was an assistant Commonwealth attorney in the same office. And we had a case that started out as a father-son fist fight. Your typical police officer responds to a domestic violence call because fight's broken out between a dad and a son. Only it turns out it's not its biological son. It's an adopted son. And when the police get him away from his dad and start asking him, you know, why are you in this fight, he starts telling him that his dad and his dad's friends have been molesting him, which, of course, is this horrible in and of itself. But it takes a bizarre twist after that. Because it turns out these grown men like to dress up as babies. And they would wear adult diapers and adult baby clothes. They had adult-sized pacifiers and bottles. And
where do they buy those items?
On the dark net that you were talking about, I think, Chris. But they would dress up as babies, and they would get underage boys to care for them as babies. And unfortunately, as funny as this all sounds, it wasn't funny that they were performing sex acts on the young boys too.
Oh my God.
But it was the strangest thing, and ironically, they wound up making a CSI episode where they had to have stolen my case file.
Because really? Because
just
like
two
that?
Or 3 years ago, I saw a CSI episode where they were investigating these people that are into this adult baby fetish, and it was remarkably similar to the case I handled, which was all the way back in 2000. But that easily was the most bizarre case I ever processed.
There's a saying in prosecution and law enforcement, if you don't laugh at some of this stuff, you'll cry.
You'll cry, absolutely. Oh, wow. It's about 8 minutes before 10 o'clock. This hour, Ray, has gone entirely too fast. I know you have something else you want to talk about before we leave today.
I want to talk to these prosecutors about what do you see after this post-Ferguson thing. Are you seeing any of the ramifications within the police departments that you deal with? I know the police departments in Baltimore and in Detroit and in a number of places are just, they don't want to be on the media being called a racist, so they frequently are not doing, moving as quickly as they used to. So are you seeing anything, or what do you see down the road?
I don't think we've seen a slowdown in policing in Kenton County. What my biggest concern for the officers that work in my community right now is that nobody wants to be skewered and roasted by the media for shooting someone before it's even in its media. They're not the ones that control the TV stations or the radio talk shows or the internet, certainly, and that's more what the officers are afraid of, is not the lack of community support, but just being roasted by the media before all the facts are even gathered.
Thank you all for being with us.